Hello and welcome along to the Property Academy Podcast. I'm your host, Tim McKnight.
I'm Andrew Nicol.
And today on the show, we're talking about dual income houses. Are they worth investing in? We're going to talk about both the pros and the cons. Now, this comes from a listener of the show, Anita, who says, "Hey, Ed and Andrew, pros and cons of dual income houses. Interested in your experience, your opinions in terms of the yield, the capital growth, and are they harder both to tenant and then also to resell later on?" Now, Andrew, explain, what do we mean by a dual income house or a dual income property?
So this is a real estate investment where you're going to generate multiple sources of income from the property. So sometimes these might be called home and income. So often in Wellington, you hear about home and income, where you might have, because there's a lot of it's on the hill, you might have upstairs, which can be rented out as one house, and then downstairs could be rented out as a flat or another house, or it could be a duplex, so two connected properties side by side, or it could be a property with a granny flat or a minor dwelling at the back, or it could be a dual key apartment. And that's where you buy one apartment, but it can be divided up into two rentals. So you might have, often you see one will be a one bedroom apartment, and then there'll be a door that leads to another separate studio apartment, which you can rent out separately, or you can rent the whole thing together.
Now let's go through the main advantages of dual income properties. The main one, which is probably why you're interested in it, Anita, is the increased rental yield. And the reason for this is that you've got two sources of rental income from your dual income property, but you're often not paying for two houses or two properties. So the purchase price of a multi-income property might be 1.5 times what it would be if you just bought it separately, but you've got those two sources of rental income. I remember doing a piece of analysis where we were looking at a dual key property, so the apartment example that Andrew just gave, and if you were to buy those properties separately, it was something like $1.3, $1.4 million. But if you bought it together, it was about $950K, $1 million. So often when you've got a dual income property, you've got two sources of income, but you're not paying for two houses. You're paying for 1.5 houses. That's the way to think about it. So if I think about a single income property, you might be looking at, say, a 4.5% gross yield if it was, you know, purchased in today's market. But if you were purchasing a dual income property, you're probably looking at more like a 6% gross yield. What's the second major pro, Andrew?
The second big one is less risk of vacancy, so time when you're not going to have a tenant. Now, you're still going to have vacancy of some sort, but with a double income property, if one tenant leaves, well, you've still got another income coming in. So often this can be quite useful for people who are retired, for example, who need to live off the rental income because they've got no mortgages anymore, and so they don't want their income too disrupted by having a vacancy. If you've got one property that's vacant, we got no money coming in. But if you've got a dual key apartment, for example, and one tenancy is vacant, you've still got 50% of the income coming in. And if you do have a mortgage, if you're using a yield property to prop up maybe a negatively geared growth portfolio, then that's still going to have some income coming in to help pay the mortgages and other costs. I think one of the other big advantages, if you've got a home and income, for example, particularly in places like Queenstown, or if you're in central Wellington or something like that, you might be able to live in one part, if that's what your plan is, and then generate an income by Airbnb-ing maybe the other part. So I know even one of our property partners, Lance, I know that his wife Airbnbs a unit which is off their house in Wellington. Similarly, if you've got one of those dual key apartments, you might be able to rent out one as a long-term rental, but Airbnb the other. So say, for example, you rented out your main unit for $600 a week and you thought, I really want to try this Airbnb, but I don't want to try it for the whole unit. You might rent out the studio apartment for, you know, $200 a night and then see what sort of pickup you get from that.
Yeah, I think the other major pro is that if you are living in it personally, it's really useful if you've got a multi-generation household. So there are a lot of Asian families who prefer, and actually Pacifica families, who prefer to have a couple of generations, maybe the grandparents, the parents, and some kids, all three generations living in one property. Well, I know it can be really beneficial if maybe the grandparents have their own separate space. So you can still look after them. They can still be close. They can still be there for babysitting duties. But they can also live separately. And I know In the past, some of you who listen to the show know that I've had issues with mothers-in-laws. Andrew's laughing because it's absolutely true. Yeah. If I was living with them, I'd prefer they were in a different part of the house. Is that controversial to say?
Yeah, I think it's good.
Now that we've talked about some of the significant advantages, really think about that last one, guys. The advantages of dual keys. Let's talk about some of the downsides. And I think the first one is the high cost. So if you buy a dual income property, it is going to be more expensive to purchase and potentially maintain compared to if you just purchase a single income property. So if I think about maybe the cost of a dual key apartment in Auckland, you know, it might be $950K, $1.1 million, somewhere thereabouts. Well, that is naturally going to be higher than the cost of a single townhouse, even in the same city, which might be, say, $800K or $830K, something along those lines. So because you're buying two dwellings, it is naturally going to be more expensive than if you just bought a single dwelling. In some instances, you may also have higher costs associated with that property. So let's say you owned a boarding house, which is another example of a dual income property, that might have higher property management fees. There might be body corporates if you're buying a dual key apartment, for instance. So although your gross yield might be 1.5 percentage points higher, because you've got those extra costs, your net yield, so that's the amount of rental income you get once you've taken in all of those costs into account, it might be 1% higher. So although you will get a higher rental income, you will also have higher costs, both in terms of ongoing costs and also their initial purchase price.
And I think the other big one is you've got potential for lower capital growth. So these types of properties are often built to maximize their rental return. So they often will sacrifice some of the aspects that would lead to higher capital growth. And if you think about it this way, dual key apartments are great for people wanting high rental income, but they're not going to be suitable to the masses. They're suitable for a certain market. And so because of that, you're not going to create the same competition when you sell them. And we often say that apartments, for example, might get 1.5% less capital growth per year than the equivalent growth property because of that smaller market.
So if your property normally would go up by 6%, your dual key apartment might go up by 4.5%. Now, that's the case for a dual key apartment, but Anita's question is really about dual income houses. Would you say that that is still the case if it's a dual income house?
Well, what I've seen is often if you look at a property which has got a home and income component to it, often the price is significantly higher than just buying a house. And again, that probably pushes a lot of people out of the potential market. So I saw one in Christchurch not so long ago that a friend of mine asked me to look at for him. It was in Kashmir, so a really good area. They were essentially trying to sell it as if it were two houses, but it was on one title. So I would consider that a dual income property rather than two separate properties, because you couldn't sell them off as two separate properties. But they were trying to get the equivalent of it being worth two separate properties. One was, say, $600,000, the other being $450,000. Well, that's just not real. And so, as such, I said he should make a discounted offer.
I think that's probably fair enough. Our general sense, and although it's very hard to see because there's no significant or robust data set that would allow you to do a good comparison, but generally speaking, we'd expect the capital growth to be less on a dual income property because they just aren't going to be as appealing to a mass market because not everybody wants to have a home that they live in and then also have somebody living on the same premises, which I think is fair enough, right? Some people are going to love that because they're going to think, great, extra income, but it's not going to appeal to a more mass market.
I think if you think about it this way, if you could potentially convert, say, the house back to one big dwelling afterwards, maybe then you might get comparable growth. So say you had a massive house in Ponsonby, for example, good location, but the yield was just going to be terrible. So what you did is you divided into three separate flats and rented it out that way to get the yield up so that it was a sustainable investment. Then maybe that would work when you convert it back to one big villa later on, but that's probably just a really specific example.
I think the one last one that I want to talk about is the potential for tenant conflicts. So sometimes there can be issues if you've got two separate dwellings on the same title and then those tenants start getting into conflict. And there was a great case study we did, I can't remember when, but it was about some tenants in Amberley. So somebody had purchased a dual income property, and these were standalone houses next to each other. I think they were both two bedrooms. Granny flat on the back of the section, main house on the front, and there was a fence between them. But because the tenant in the front house started having issues with the landlord, and the tenant in the back house was quite friendly with the landlord, those two tenants started getting into conflict. Now, this isn't always going to happen. I'm not saying if you buy a dual income house, your tenants are going to start hating each other. There are people all over the country who get into situations where it's neighbours at war. And I think I've spoken before about from Whalers Gate in New Plymouth.
She's going to be driven out of New Plymouth at this rate.
Maybe I shouldn't say that. Bleep out the name,
no,
David.
No, too late.
Bleep out the name. The people don't need to know. But in some instances, especially if you're self-managing, this is going to have to be something that you just need to be aware of, that your tenants could get into conflict.
So I know that actually a friend of mine used to have a house that he rented out the apartment below and did so successfully for a number of years. But then what happened is it became too friendly with the guy that was renting it out, who was a bit of a degenerate. He was drinking all the time.
Sounds like a nice guy. sounds like my kind of guy.
Sounds like someone that would fit in well with you, mate. But he was drinking all the time, having parties, and it was directly underneath them. Then my friend and his partner had a baby, and it just became a real chaotic environment. So he ended up selling the entire property just because he couldn't be bothered with it anymore.
That makes a lot of sense. If you're living in one part of the house and your tenants in another. Now, Andrew, what about Anita's questions about tenanting and reselling a property? Are dual income properties harder to tenant?
So not in my experience. I normally budget. If I'm doing a budget for a dual income property, I do budget slightly higher vacancy just because I could see how it would be harder to tenant. So, you know, say you had a dual income apartment, you might say, okay, well, you know, this only suits a certain number of people, so I'm going to work on 3 or 4 weeks vacancy rather than the normal two that we would use. But I haven't seen that in practice. I just do that by default, just to be conservative. Again, the more specific your property is, the more vacancy you probably want to budget for.
And what about time to sell that property? Is it harder in your experience to sell a dual income?
I think they are potentially harder to sell than just a traditional property. Again, because you're dealing on the fringes of the bell curve. So you're dealing with a specific type of property that only is suitable for a specific type of person. And so there are a few of those out there.
So that might be because you could only sell it to an investor, or you could only sell it to somebody who wants to have either a multi-generational household or who is keen to rent part of their property out to another person. So that's where it might take a little bit longer to sell. But again, there's no really strong data that you can look at and have a good level of confidence in that would tell us that that's true. That's just from our experience and what we've seen. Right, let's wrap it up there, but please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the Property Academy podcast. Really does help us get the message out to more people. And hey, if you've got a friend who has similar questions like Anita did about dual income properties, then you might like to send this to them. Sharing the podcast is one of the main ways that people find out about the show, and that's one thing you could do to keep growing this property investment community we're building. Thanks for listening to the Property Academy podcast. I'm your host, Steve McKnight.
And I'm Andrew Nicol.
And we're going to be back again tomorrow with even more daily strategies, tactics, and insights to help you get the most out of the New Zealand property market. Until next time.